Some of you are going to find this a bit incredulous, but here's something that federal, state, and local governments all tell us to do that we should actually listen to. Eat more fruits and vegetables. You've heard about the health benefits of increasing plant-based nutrients into your diet, but how can you easily consume all the fruits and veggies needed? Well, it's easy. By adding grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity into your meals. Grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity is a power blend that has 31 fruits and vegetables in every scoop. Organic vegetables, super greens, super fruits, and super sprouts. It is fortified with essential vitamins plus an immunity boost. And right now, you can get a free 2-week supply of grown American superfood and essential vitamins plus immunity by just paying $8.95 for the shipping and handling. And not only that, you'll also get a free frother to quickly whip up your healthy and nutritious grown American drink. Go to grownamericansuperfood.com/John and order today.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
This is Sirius XM Progress, and you made it to Friday night. I'm John Fugelsang, so happy to be here with you on Channel 127. For the next 3 hours, we'll be coming at you at 866-997-4748. We're going to be talking with the God Squad to make fun of all those revolting Pharisees. We will also talk with author Jess McHugh about an incredible new book about Nazi hunters in love. We got a great show planned tonight. We're at 866-997-4748, and we'd love to have you join us. 866-997-GRIT. Our show is executive produced by Chris Hauselt. The mighty Thea Harper is producing our show out of Brooklyn. I come to you from Manhattan. We are so glad you are with us. Let's do a show. Earlier today, Joe Biden offered remarks on the progress his administration has been making on health care. And he actually thanked Senator Bernie Sanders, friend of this show, for his years of hard work and the pressure on the issue. Here's a clip of Joe Biden earlier today.
I'm proud of my administration has taken on Big Pharma in the most significant ways ever. And I wouldn't have done without Bernie. And Bernie got it. You know, look. Bernie was the one who was leading the way for decades in which we're here today. You know, Bernie mentioned Americans pay more for prescription drugs than any other advanced nation in the world. If you walk into a local drugstore here in America, the prices are at least 2 to 3 times more for the exact same prescription made by the exact same pharmaceutical company in Canada, France, Italy, and even in Eastern Europe, all around the world. But not anymore. For years, people have talked about how Medicare has the power to negotiate for lower drug prices, prescription drug prices, the government pays for, just like the VA does when they're able to negotiate medicines and needs for the veterans. But we've tried and tried and tried. And finally, with Bernie's help, I finally got my Inflation Reduction Act, which passed. Bernie helped get it passed. Not one Republican in the entire Congress, this did surprise me, I have to admit to you, not one single Republican voted for it, not one single one, to give us authority to take on and beat Big Pharma.
Let's go to the phones. We're going to be taking your calls all hour. We will get to everyone's call tonight. Pastor John. Pastor, thank you so much for your patience. You're on Sirius XM. Hello and good evening.
Well, good evening, John. I hope you had a wonderful Easter Resurrection Sunday. I wanted us to think about the subject of remember and vote. You know,
please.
The disciples and the women, they forgot about Christ and how he said, you know, Son of Man's going to be betrayed, you know, sinful hands, but third day rise again after his crucifixion. We have to remember tonight, 56 years ago, what was going on? Dr. King gave his mountaintop speech, right?
That's right.
And most America has forgotten about that. Although Joe Reed had something about that, talked about how he talked about boycotting too. But
well, they'll play it on the news tomorrow on the actual anniversary of his murder. But you're right.
Yeah, but they won't play the boycott part that Joy Reed played tonight.
No one plays that.
Let's get together and boycott. You know,
no one talks about how at the end of Dr. King's life, he was fighting for labor and against war as hard as he was fighting for civil rights. You're right, sir.
He's gone because of the poor people's campaign. There are 66 million poor, low-wealth white Americans right now. And he was bringing everybody together. Civil rights are being done, you know, the Voting Rights Act, although the 1875 Voting Rights Act, which was passed by black men and white men who voted in fusion coalitions before they brought into segregation, according to Dr. King's speech from March 25th, 1965, they passed that act. It was deemed unconstitutional in 1883 by the Supreme Court. But here's what I want us to do and to remember. I want us to remember and vote those who were crucified. Now, there's Mr. and Mrs. Mr. and Mrs. Harry T. Moore, NAACP leaders in Florida, crucified on Christmas Day, December 25th, 1951. They registered blacks to vote in the South more than any since Reconstruction. They killed them on their 25th wedding anniversary and put a bomb beneath their bed. You've got Reverend George Lee, crucified on May 7th. By the way, Medgar Evers looked into that case. Medgar Evers got killed at 39, so he must have been in his 20s after coming from World War II. You have Reverend George Lee, crucified on May 7th for registering blacks in the South. They all need to be given posthumously the Presidential Medal of Freedom. We have Mr. William Moore, crucified on April 23rd, 1963. He's the reason that John Lewis had the Bloody Sunday march, because this white man, William Moore, by himself, you know, gets killed 45 minutes after being on a radio show for marching for black people. Then you have Mrs. Viola Luzio.
Right.
I always talk about Dr. King's speech he gave on March 25th, 1965, voting rights speech, right? Where black and white men voted together. He talks about that in the 19th century. She gets killed, this white lady from Detroit, you know, which the president needs to give her posthumously the Medal of Freedom and take it to Michigan and remind the young people and others you have to vote. And then you got to have Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer, you know, wasn't crucified, but she was beat up, you know. Then you have Mr. Jimmie Lee Jackson, African-American, killed on February 18, 1965. You have a white minister, James Reeb, killed on March 11, 1965, for voting rights. We have to honor these people and teach the new generation that people die for your right to vote. Get off your butt and vote.
Okay. Thank you. Can I tell you what I like the most about what you just said? Can I tell you what I like the most about the whole litany that you just shared with us? It's really important. We talk all the time about how Christianity has been responsible for so many of the atrocities in this country. And it's true. Going back to Columbus, but at every step of the way, including Columbus, it has been Christians who actually care about what's in the damn Bible who have been the resistance to these acts. Bartolomeo de las Casas on Columbus's boat wrote back to the Queen in protest. Christians were a huge portion of the abolitionist movement, while other Christians were propping up slavery. And as you so ably pointed out, Christians were at the core of the civil rights movement, even while it was so-called Christians in the South who were perpetuating America's system of apartheid and segregation.
The fake, phony, sinful, unchristian, white racist nationalist fake Christianity, not the real Jesus, you know, of love.
Right on, man.
Agape love.
That's it.
Where you have where you
Pastor
have,
John, you got to call more often, man. You got to call more often, dude.
Hey, when you get out with Stephanie Miller's show, also do this, if you would. She said almost a year or so ago that when Bill Clinton was president, the assault weapons ban helped to stop a whole lot of killings, right? And then when George Bush allowed it to expire in 2004, the Republican Party, things went up a whole lot. The Democrats need to get the police together and say, look, we love our police, we support our police, and we support an assault weapons ban so we can protect our children, our citizens, and our police. They got to do politics, you know, 101. You know what I'm saying?
Right on, man. Yeah. I do.
All right, brother.
Thank you, sir. Soon. Don't be a stranger. I appreciate your call. We're at 866-997-4748. We're going to get to everybody's calls tonight, so please let us know how you're feeling. Catherine in Vegas, thank you so much for your patience. You're on Sirius XM.
Well, hello, John.
Hey.
Growing up a Catholic and going to a Catholic school that was almost all white, your guests were totally right in that growing up, the lessons in school were always, you know, religion was a part of daily class. We're always, let he who is without sin cast the first stone. Whatsoever yes. you do to the least of my people, that you do unto me. They were yep. all the Jesus, love your neighbors, loaves and the fishes, good Samaritan stories that we learned growing up.
Yes.
And there was a shift that happened when the conservative Catholic bishops in America made their unholy alliance with the Republican Party mm-hmm. that became apparent in the Gospels. And the day it really made me sick to my stomach, my boyfriend at the time, sister, was having her baby baptized. And the priest's homily during the Mass where the baby was being baptized was how wonderful they chose to have this baby because some other evil people choose abortion. And yeah, I was so disgusted.
I know.
So,
I know. They have
they,
to. But they got to bring it back to politics. They got to bring it back to politics. Always. It used to drive me crazy in church because I've been through the Bible. It's not pro-abortion, but it never once condemns people who terminate pregnancies ever.
Well, and they're openly defying the Pope, who told them that we should be loving these people and not, you know, criticizing and demonizing these people.
Oh,
so,
I know.
And he said that but about
abortion. They don't like
abortion.
This Pope.
So,
they don't
yeah,
like this
no
Pope.
Kidding. No kidding. But the point I want to make about the legislation of religion is, like, of course we have to legislate, you know, you can't murder people so that we can live in a civil society. However,
yes.
the right wants to legislate religion. And a huge point of the Bible is that God gave us each free will to choose freely on our own whether we decide to follow him or not. So if they are legislating, you must follow him or pay the price, basically hold a gun to your head, they are stripping you of your free will to freely of your own volition choose
Preach.
To follow in that religion. And
Preach.
They are stripping you of your ability to earn your way into heaven.
Wow. Well, I'm not qualified to make a judgment call on that one, but I like that way you say it. Absolutely.
I mean, like, hey, look, none of us really know what the real answer is, but I'm just
exactly.
saying that if they honestly believe that we are have free will to make our own decisions for us, then why are they legislating our decisions for us?
Exactly right. Right. I mean, that goes to the core of everything. That goes to the core of the abortion argument. It goes to the core of so much of their sexuality hangups. I mean, but again, it's like it's all about control. It's all about control. And abortion
right.
has been a very useful tool to keep people interested in church, a certain kind of person interested in a certain kind of church for the last 45 years of our lives. But it's driving a lot of other people away because they're not focusing on the things that made the religion special in the first place, that made the religion
100%.
Worthwhile in the first. It's all just meanness. It's all just a mean little fucking club.
100%. And hey, you know what? Just because they bring it back to politics, I'm going to bring it back to politics. So how wonderful it is that we can have this discussion and express our opinions, including people calling into this radio station, giving their name, giving the place that they live in, and saying that they're so angry with Biden and they'll never vote for him because he's a horrible, terrible, awful person. And if you don't vote for Biden and the other guy gets in and he gets his life wish to turn us into Putin's Russia, you can go into a gulag for doing just that.
Boom! Drop that mic and leave the stage, lady. You just nailed it. Catherine, thank you so much.
Thank you, Don.
You're totally right.
I thought you would like that.
I do.
Hey, man, I loved your discussion so much. You guys inspired me.
They're great, aren't they? I love all three of them. They're great together, too. I want to go on a crime spree with those guys. Just a riot.
Yes,
Catherine, thank you. Thank you so much. Have a great evening. Take care. 866-997-4748. Let me get one more call in before the break. We are getting to all of you tonight, as God is my witness. Norm in Tampa. Sir, thank you for your patience. You're on Progress.
Hey, John, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, man?
Hear me out. I've been on the phone for about 5-6 hours trying to get this report out. There's a
Please.
Very interesting report that came out just about 5 o'clock today. I tried to get Dean to get me on here. It's by a guy named Uval Abram, okay? It's about a AI system. In fact, it says Lavender, the AI machine, directed Israel's bombing spree in Gaza. And this machine has targeted, this device, this AI device, targeted 37,000 Palestinians for assassination. And it's an AI program. And Uval talks about this, a pretty long article. You can pull this up. It's in the 972 magazine, 972. And what he shows is that this program is designed so that it would, so when you want to bomb a person, you wait till they get, they knows when they come home, and they drop one they call the dumb bomb, which then kills 100 or so people. So Lavender is a program that Israel has, a special unit in Israel, and this is, it says here, this special unit is called Israel, the Elite Intelligence Unit 8200, makes a case for designing a special machine that could rapidly process massive amount of data and generate thousands of potential targets of military strikes. And one of the programs, here's another program that this Lavender program works with. You can pull this stuff up.
Tell me.
It's a program they call Where's My Dad? I swear.
Where's my what? I'm sorry, where's my what?
Where's my dad?
Where's my dad? Okay. Okay.
That's another program. So Where's My Daddy? It works in identifying buildings and stuff. And then what happens is that sometimes people are in the building and they use this for bombing targets and stuff like that. So here it says, additionally automated includes one called Where's My Daddy? Also reveals that here is the first time we're used specifically to track targets, individuals, and carry out bombings when they are entered into the family building. You can pull this up on the internet.
Okay.
And there's
okay.
another one here.
Okay. Make it quick. I got to hit a break, so let me know. Tell me quick.
The Gospel. It's called, the program is called The Gospel. But the point is all what these people are saying is real. This is select targeting and stuff, and the death toll is far more great. You should see the pictures in this thing. And you can pull this up. Go to 9-7. This guy's name is Uval Abram. Y-U-V-A-L Abraham. And this is April 3rd, 2024, which is today. So I was on when called into Dean Obadala, and a guy handed this to me. One of my partners called and said, hey, you need to look at this, man. That the Israeli army is doing and stuff, and thousands of people been killed. I mean, the pictures are just graphic, man, about this thing. And you pull this up, it's a 972 magazine. This just came out and stuff, and the program is called Lavender.
Lavender. Now, here's my last question: can I get a link to this article if I go to You Are Within the Norms? Can I get a link to this article?
No, well, you're within the norms. We really don't, you know, we stumbled across this because we're talking, looking for, you know, narcotic violence. And then we come across a lot of strange things like Nazis and former Nazis involved in the drug trade and those sort of thing. So we came across this one because, you know, all of a sudden we were looking at AI and how they identify doctors in terms of target doctors, DEA target doctors. And then we put AI and this thing popped up. What is this? And then all this stuff. So what these people have been saying, I was listening to all these calls, people calling in.
Norm, I got to hit a break.
Yeah.
All right, brilliant. Hey, thank you. It's good to hear from you. I appreciate it very much. I'm always learning a lot of new stuff from you, man, and I thank you for calling. We will be right back with your calls at 866-997-4748. This is SiriusXM Progress.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crow portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back to SiriusXM. I'm John Fugelsang. I am so thrilled to welcome our next guest. She has written a book that you are going to want to own for yourself and buy as a gift for the smart, cool, moral person in your life. It tells the story of Beat Kunzel, who was a German au pair, and Serge Klarsfeld, who was a Romanian-born French Jew who'd lost his dad at Auschwitz. They met in Paris, on the subway, in 1960, they fell in love, they were married, and together they created a family business unlike any other, amateur Nazi hunters. The list of the criminals the Klarsfelds tracked down is a who's who of Hitler henchmen and French collaborators, including Klaus Barbie and Kurt Lischka. It is a wonderful book. It reads like a Hollywood spy thriller, and it's written by Jess McHugh, author, researcher, journalist, and editor. You may have read her stuff in The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, The Post, The Nation, Time, The Paris Review. She also covered the 2015 Paris attacks on the ground, met musicians, refugees, and other Parisians working toward the city's recovery. Her book, American Non, published in 2021, is about how innocuous best-selling books have actually served quietly as blueprints for the good American, molding our common language and culture. But nothing compares to this new book, Nazi Hunting, A Love Story, telling the inspiring story of the couple who brought some of the most notorious Nazis to justice. It's a pleasure and an honor to welcome Jess McHugh to SiriusXM.
Thanks so much. I'm really happy to be here.
Thank you. I love this story. It's thrilling. It's inspiring. It's moral. Dare I say it's even fun. It's certainly emotionally satisfying. How did you first hear of this couple, and what compelled you to put pen to paper and write this story now at this point in your career?
Sure. So, you know, it all started as things often do. I was procrastinating something else. I was on social media and I saw an archival video of Beat slapping then Chancellor of Germany, Kissinger, who was a former Nazi. And I remember thinking, you know, who is this woman? What is this story? I had never heard of the Klarsfelds. And the more I dug into it, the more I realized, you know, some of the things you just mentioned, whether it was tracking down Klaus Barbie or attempting to kidnap, you know, a Nazi in their Mercedes coupe. So from there, I reached out to them, interviewed them in person, and it just turned into this really sprawling kind of research project that paired their incredible story that they can still tell now, given that they're alive and still working, and all of these many, you know, primary source documents here in Paris.
I love how creative their protests were to raise awareness and inspire action in others. And I want to talk about how creative they got, but I have to ask the dumbest question. How did this start for them? I mean, I understand they met and fell in love, but what happened that really set them on this life path of tracking down these treacherous Nazis?
You know, it's interesting. They both sort of say it jokingly that it fell into their lap, which was that they were this newly married couple in the late 60s and they were reading the newspaper and they saw, you know, a one line note in a newspaper about the new Chancellor of Germany, Kissinger, saying mm-hmm. that he had been a former Nazi and that he had been part of the propaganda wing of Hitler's Germany. And they were both so taken aback by this that, you know, to hear them tell it now, it's as if no other life could be imagined. They both said, you know, we had to do something about this. Beat in particular, as a young German, felt that this could not stand. And so she began by, you know, writing articles, giving speeches, doing pamphlets. But when that didn't give quite enough of a stir, she moved on to some of these more creative protests, shall we say.
I mean, I've always thought I was against punching Nazis, but after reading how she gave the chancellor a black eye on camera, I've really revised my opinion on that. It would be
indeed.
Yeah, I mean, it's heroic and moving, and it would be understandable and it would be wrong to assume that the Klarsfelds were merely driven by a need to avenge those who were murdered by the Nazis. But Serge and Beat were each motivated by something deeper and personal to each of them, given their backgrounds. Can I ask you, please, who are Beat and Serge Klarsfeld and what drove them individually to continue their work to this day?
Sure. So I really think, you know, for the two of them, it's slightly different. As you mentioned, Serge lost his father to Auschwitz, and Beat's father actually voted for Hitler and fought for the Wehrmacht army. So they were coming at it from these kind of twin and in many ways opposite perspectives. I think for both of them, it was about justice, not about revenge. And so yes. For Beat, I think it was really about not letting the sins of the father define her, which was something that I think so many of her generation in Germany felt. And that was why this crusade against Kissinger was so important and against these other Nazis. It was about building a truly new Germany. And for Serge, it was about turning this grief, this loss, into something that looked like justice, like, you know, catharsis for many young Jewish kids like himself who had lost one or both parents and felt like they didn't quite know what to do with all of this sorrow.
Now, her dad had voted for Hitler and fought for the Wehrmacht army, right?
That's right.
So she was seeking to make amends for the sins of the family. And at the same time, Serge was doing this for love. I mean, he wanted the men who killed his dad to pay for what they had done. And he did it for so many orphan Jews. It seems like they both had very opposite origins of this morality, and they both met in exactly the right place.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly it. And it's what I find so poetic and beautiful in their story is that it seems like in meeting and in falling in love, they really brought out the best in each other. And it's funny because I think, you know, Serge's motive feels almost more obvious, but he always says, you know, and even recently I spoke to him a few weeks ago, he said, I wouldn't have become the man that I was without Beat. I would have been a sad and maybe an angry person, but thanks to her, I was a happy person who happened to hunt Nazis.
And she's making amends for her family, something that I think a lot of Americans don't really understand about our German brothers and sisters. There's an intense, not just a shame over what happened, but a real sense of responsibility to atone and prevent, something that in a country where we still fly the Confederate flag, I think a lot of Americans haven't absorbed quite yet, that kind of morality.
Yeah, it's really a different approach that they've taken. And I think it's something that we could learn some lessons from, which was that, you know, rightly so, as Beat pointed out, in the 60s and 70s, there not yet enough had been done to really rectify and reckon with this history. But since then, it's been such a groundswell shift of people from her generation and the generation after saying, pretending like this didn't happen is not the way forward. The way forward is to really own what we've done and to educate our children about how wrong it was and how responsible we all are, as opposed to trying to foist it off on some sort of faraway boogeyman of our great grandfathers. And I think, mm-hmm. you know, it's really served dividends in contemporary Germany, where, you know, they took so many refugees during the refugee crisis in Europe. And I think that's one example of how far they've come.
Yeah, I think some of our younger listeners might be shocked to know that there were still Nazis in power being elected in the 1970s. I remember when I was a kid and Kurt Waldheim was elected to the leadership of Austria and we couldn't believe it. I mean, in their time, like the Chancellor of Germany, it seems inconceivable today in the era of Angela Merkel and such responsibility towards the past that this was still going on in the 70s.
Yeah, it's really shocking. And I think the fact that Beat, who was an otherwise, you know, educated person, was shocked speaks to just how many people didn't know that these Nazis were serving not just in government, but were lawyers, were bankers, were not hiding, you know, in some faraway South American jungle. They were living in positions of power in the same cities they had grown up in.
I want to ask about their methods, which I find amazing and quite entertaining. But for those who aren't as familiar with the history of World War II, can I ask you, for those who don't understand, why their focus on the Nazis in France?
They started with the Nazis in France, partially because, you know, Serge's father had been deported from Nice and that was where they had grown up. But France was in this very unique situation in which, contrary to some of the Eastern European countries, such as Poland and even Belgium that had been occupied, France had kind of struck this, you know, collaborationist agreement with Germany, in which part of the country would be run by the French on this kind of puppet government named Vichy. And so the issue was that after the war, the Allies made it such that Germans could not prosecute Nazis in Germany. However, France did not have an extradition treaty. So Germans were, you know, a few hours driving from France, but could not be prosecuted for war crimes. And so the Klarsfeld method really was to gather as much kind of solid documentation proof in a very sort of academic way of these are the telegrams of Nazis sent to, you know, sending children to their deaths. These are the directives on Jewish propaganda. These are the signatures of the men, and to bring them to the German prosecutor and to the French government and say, we're going to make this as uncomfortable as possible unless you do something.
I mean, it's shocking to think about 76,000 French Jews killed in the concentration camps, 3,000 in the detention camps, at least 1,000 French Jews were just straight up executed. And yet those who had acted in France were the only Nazis in the world who were essentially living under full impunity.
Exactly. And I think that's what was so shocking for them both, and shocking for a lot of French people now, because part of what I tried to explore in this story and in speaking to Serge is this, the ways in which, you know, France has had trouble reconciling its own part in this history and, you know, is more comfortable thinking of themselves as martyrs or as resistance fighters, as opposed to as perpetrators. And so I think part of what they did and the Klarsfelds did specifically was to say, look, in order to prosecute the Germans, we're also going to have to prosecute some of these French collaborationists, because these Jews were not deported through German people. They were deported through French people.
The Washington Post just ran a wonderful excerpt of your book. The title is A Nazi Hunting Couple's Audacious Scheme to Take Down a Top SS Officer. It's just an excerpt, but it shows how beautiful your writing is, how incredible the storytelling is, how ingenious their plotting was, and what a great movie this is going to make. I'm going to ask you who you'd like to see cast before we're done, but I'd just like to ask you about this one particular story, because it's sort of new in their career as going after this. And as they were going through boxes and looking over signatures and initials on telegrams, they underwent this, I guess you'd call it a botched abduction, that wound up really causing incredible change. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about Kurt Lischka? And what was the process these two amateur civilians used to take him down, literally?
So this, I think, is one of the wilder episodes in their very adventurous life, which was that, you know, they discovered that Kurt Lischka was essentially the kind of the top of the SS in France and in Paris specifically during the occupation. And they discovered this, as you said, through this kind of very meticulous documentation. Once they did that, they literally called information in Germany and said, hey, do you have a listing for Kurt Lischka in Cologne? That's how they found his address. They came and they, which is just wild. He was clearly not hiding.
And he hadn't changed his name, right? He was still going by his Nazi name in the 70s.
Exactly. And he was still living in the same town. It took them all of 60 seconds to find him. However, once they found him, they could not get either a German court or a French court to prosecute him. And so they decided that what they were going to do is they were going to kidnap him, drive him to Paris, and then the French would be obligated to prosecute. It did not exactly go to plan. They were supposed to have a four-door car that they rented. They ended up with a Mercedes two-door coupe, which is not the ideal kidnapping vehicle. Their, you know, allies were an Orthodox doctor, a photographer, another young friend of theirs. They're in their mid-30s by this time. And so what they do is they try to bludgeon Lischka as he's coming home for lunch and kind of hustle him into this car. It doesn't work. The whole thing is a snafu. But what is kind of wild and does work is that Beat gives herself up to the German courts and says, I tried to kidnap Kurt Lischka by myself. Here's why you should take me into custody. And it became a media sensation that eventually did lead to his imprisonment.
I mean, she said, you know, I did it. You should arrest me for attempted kidnapping and put a young mom in jail while you let a Nazi walk the streets. And they arrested her right away, right?
Exactly. I think she was surprised that that was the decision. And she was in jail for a few weeks, I believe, while she was pending trial. So, I mean, in the end, and to hear her say it, she talks about it again as if no other choice were imaginable. And her main concern was, you know, is Serge going to be okay? Is my son going to be okay? But it worked.
I mean, it's a brilliant story. It's a scary story. This guy Lyshko is apparently a gigantic hulk of a man they tried to take down and stuff in a trunk. But they really were following the blueprint of the U.S. civil rights movement, weren't they? I mean, these protests were really clever, and they were willing to let themselves go to jail just to raise awareness because they knew that would inspire a lot of action.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's such a fascinating lesson from the late 60s and the early 70s. And I think they were very clearly taking cues from, you know, the likes of the lunch counter demonstrations, which was this idea of, you know, civil disobedience, of doing something that you knew was breaking the law, to protest a law that you found to be, and in my opinion, was unjust. And it really did work. I mean, for their first protest, when she slapped the chancellor, that was everywhere. But I mean, the botched kidnapping, I think, put them on the map in a much larger way.
I mean, was that always the plan? Did they always have this backup that if the kidnapping doesn't go right, we'll do this audacious play to just go walk into the police station and confess it?
Yes. Yeah. They had discussed it beforehand. And Bayard had said, you know, I'm ready to make this sacrifice because I think it's really our only option here. They had expected that when the kidnapping went awry, that there would be more coverage of it in the news. And when there wasn't, they said, well, I guess we're going with plan B.
Wow. I mean, incredible that they had such a brilliant plan B. Although plan A wasn't completely out of the blue. I mean, the Mossad got Eichmann from a bus stop, didn't they? I mean, there was precedent for just snatching these Nazis off the street.
Yeah, exactly. You know, yeah, Eichmann was snatched at a bus stop. They put him in a plane, you know, a commercial plane, I believe, that people didn't even know that he was on, to bring to Israel, where he was tried and convicted. And so their idea, which wasn't a wild idea, I think it was only a few hour drive from Cologne to France, was that if we can get him to the doorsteps of the French prefecture, then he will be, you know, in their jurisdiction. And why not try?
How have the Klarsfells felt about your book? They must be very pleased to finally have their story be told like this for Western audiences.
Yeah, I think they're really excited. They, you know, they're pretty well known here in France, but I think they just don't have as much of the credit as I think they deserve elsewhere, especially in the U.S. And so I'm really just honored that they've, you know, been so generous with their time with me and to get this out to a wider audience.
On a sadder note, I think their work is perhaps more relevant than ever right now. You write beautifully, Holocaust memory is not immutable. It's evolved greatly since the era when Serge and Bayard began their work in France. But history doesn't always evolve toward an ever clearer vision of the past. Rather, it's an ongoing storytelling. What are some of the more significant shifts in this evolution? And how has their work changed in response?
I think, you know, what's interesting, and it's really shocking for us to consider this today, but it's really true that especially in the immediate aftermath of World War II, the death of 6 million Jews was really treated not as one of the central goals of that war, but as sort of an unfortunate consequence. And that is something that I found so shocking, and they found so shocking, where the focus was really on military combatants and not Yes. on this very clear attempt to annihilate a whole group of people. So that's, I think, one important way in which people's understanding of the Holocaust and understanding of World War II has changed. However, I think, you know, as Serge noted to me, it's so important to be vigilant, because with the rise of far right wing parties that have always been built, you know, even if they've tried to become more acceptable by changing some of their harder rhetoric, anti-Semitism is in the DNA of the far right, is how Serge put it to me. And, yeah. And so I think it's more important than ever to be aware of these stories and the truth of what was not terribly long ago.
And I mean, their work and their documentation has become so crucial to the preservation of Holocaust memory. I know that you've said their current focus is on, because there's not that many Nazis left, their current mm-hmm. focus is on collecting the personal histories of child victims of the Holocaust.
That's right. So there were, I want to say, 11,000 children who were deported from France. And, you know, I think fewer than 100 survived, just given their ages. And so their idea was that they wanted to retrace the lives of every single child that was deported from France. So where they were born, a picture, even if they could find a remembrance from a living relative, when they died, how they died. And it's this, you know, absolutely gargantuan undertaking. The book that they've published, which is their incomplete work, I think is, you know, about a foot high and weighs about 20 pounds. But I think it's so important because it really speaks to the ways in which, you know, a mass tragedy is really hard to understand on a human level. But 6 million, and 6 million, I think, can be so hard to comprehend. But when you put it into the terms of, you know, an 8-year-old who loved to draw and had a dog named Toto, or, you know, a 2-year-old who was just learning how to walk, it really drives it home for people.
Not to make light of the subject matter, but the story is so amazing and your storytelling is so gorgeous. I guess it would be gauche to ask who you want to see play them in the movie, but let me ask, would you accept if the movie was in English, or would you prefer the movie to be in French and German? What would be your preference?
I think it's so ripe for a film, and I would be thrilled to see it, you know, come alive. I would allow an English thing, because I think it's great to get their story to the biggest possible audience. And yeah, I would love to see the Hollywood version. So hopefully more on that soon.
As you write, and so the Klarsfelds continue to do what they have always done, tell uncomfortable truths that remind us that the Holocaust is not some faraway history told in books. Its motivating forces, fascism, anti-Semitism, and oppression of minority groups are modern-day realities affecting millions of people worldwide. What's next for you, now that this book is written and published and your glowing reviews have come in?
I'm actually already at work on hopefully a new book project, but a little bit lighter topic. I'm working on a book about con artists and con artistry.
Well, American voters would know nothing about that, but I can't wait to hear what the next book's going to be called. It's such a pleasure to have you, Jess McHugh. What is the best way for our listeners to follow you and keep up with your work?
Sure. Probably I'm most active on Instagram at JessMcHugh3, or you can check out my website for new writing and send me an email.
Brilliant. Once again, the book is Nazi Hunting, A Love Story by Jess McHugh. Such a pleasure to talk about this. I love that this book exists. I love that you wrote it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
And we'll be right back.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back. I'm John Fugelsang. This is SiriusXM Progress. It's time for the God Squad. Every Wednesday, we are blessed to be joined by three of our favorite theologians who are here to put fear in the hearts of the blaspheming bigots that would use Christianity as cover for douchebaggery. Keith Giles is a former pastor, left the pulpit to follow Jesus, is the author of the best-selling 7-part Jesus Un book series you've got to check out, featuring titles like Jesus Untangled, Jesus Unarmed. I wrote the intro to that. Regular contributor to the Patheos Progressive Christian blog platform and the co-owner of Choir Publishing. Keith, it's good to see you.
goodness, we came at a good time, I can see. Excited to jump into
Glad
this.
Glad you got to hear some of that. HR has told me to stop hitting on Pastor December Rose, and I'm doing my best. She is the former pastor of the Restoration Center in Greenville, South Carolina, and the Rock Worship Center in West Union, South Carolina. She's the author of The Church Can Go to Hell, a jaw-dropping memoir and theological dive into the toxic reality of some church cultures, and a spoken word artist. I just love Pastor Rose. Welcome back. It's good to have you.
I love you back. And I promise I did not report you to HR.
No, they've heard the show. And I mean, they've sent a lot of angry letters. It's on me. Dylan Cruz is a terrific writer and a theologian and a permaculture enthusiast in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. His book is Theological Musings, Volume 1. It's a terrific collection of essays that are all about political topics, environmental topics, social topics. And his blog is The Tattooed Theologian, which I'm going to put into his bio every week because it's a blast. I recommend reading his stuff. Dylan, it's great to see you. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me. And just for Kendall's benefit, you can no more win a war than you can win a fucking earthquake.
Thank you. I think, we win a war when the war is over and there's no more violence. That's when we win. Mm-hmm. And there's no military solution to this. I mean, we haven't talked about Gaza too much, friends. And I know it's not on the menu for tonight's subjects, but I mean, I'm having a hard time believing anything other than it's a practice of targeted starvation, that they are trying to starve these people. They are murdering, targeted killing. The IDF was coordinating this route for these central kitchen workers. Yes. They bombed the first car. They ran to the second. Then they bombed the second. So the survivors ran to the third. Then they bombed the third. These are guided attacks. This was not an accident. And this is done to scare other aid workers from bringing more food into the region. So the problem is, as Christians, we've talked about the fact that we are called, as believers, as non-douchebags. If you're an atheist who's not a dick, we are called to care about the safety of the people in Israel and the people in Gaza and criticize their leadership for their human rights infractions. God knows both sides have plenty. But this is something that appears to be targeted starvation, and it's a war crime.
Yes.
And now we're paying billions to help slaughter these people, and our taxes are paying millions to try to save them. And this is where we find ourselves. I want Joe Biden to be reelected. I have no doubt that Donald Trump would be substantially worse for Muslims around the world, particularly Palestine. But since you guys came in during this, let me ask how you feel about it. Keith, how has this condition been affecting your heart?
Well, it's hard. It's like you said, John, the thing is, I have nothing but criticism for all sides, nothing but criticism for Hamas and for Netanyahu and for Joe Biden. I think everyone involved here has shown very poor judgment, and I wish we could just have a ceasefire, that we could go ahead and allow aid to be let in. The people are starving. Children are starving. It's a genocide. I don't know any other word for it. And to what your caller said, I'm sure it sounds asinine and frustrating to hear somebody say, well, you know, Hamas started this back in October. This is someone who has no idea about the history of the region. This is not
they started this started chapter by, of this. They started
yes,
this part.
They
of
started
this, back
this
in October.
Chapter of it. Yes, but it did not begin with Hamas in October. This is an ongoing thing, and you can only have someone's foot on your neck for so long before, at some point, people are going to fight back. And the way they did it, was that wrong? Yes. I wouldn't applaud that at all. I think that was a terrorist act and it was horrible. But it shouldn't surprise anybody.
Pastor Rose?
The least person is surprised is Netanyahu, who got a manuscript before the book was published, because he knew about this before it came out. But I would echo the words of the World Central Kitchen founder, Jose Andres, who said, stop using food as a weapon. And that's what I believe that they're doing. Yeah. They're doing exactly that. You don't accidentally, like you said, bomb the aid workers, one car, two car, three. That's not an accident. Somebody's behind each. When you shoot somebody unlawfully here, when they actually prosecute someone justly in law enforcement that wrongly murders someone, you are accountable for every bullet.
Amen.
Every bullet. Because there's a thought behind every bullet, and there's a thought behind every bomb.
Yeah.
Amen. I thought you were done, but I agree.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Cruz, as the veteran of the group.
There's no justification for genocide. End of. And the commission that took place a couple months ago that we seem to all have forgotten about because the 24-hour news cycle is just crushing and it's and the horrors of what's going on. They said back then they're cutting off all access to water and food and medical care.
Mm-hmm.
These are all war crimes. And yes, the United States has perpetuated war crimes so many fucking times. Mm-hmm. It makes me embarrassed to be a veteran.
Yeah.
Boom. I mean, and this is the part where we all acknowledge Hamas are evil motherfuckers and what they did was wrong.
Absolutely.
Because the people seeking to divide us will say, oh, if you criticize Netanyahu, you don't care about Israel. So we have to do this every single time and have these disclaimers because the forces.
And that's a false choice, too.
Always, always. And the same thing by saying that if you criticize Netanyahu, you don't care about the people of Israel. Good God. Right. We hear that all the time. And this is a cudgel they use on the left to try to divide progressives and liberals and moderates all the time. Sadly, it works. I'm so sick of it, friends.
Yeah. Same here.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into something lighter.
Nationalist evangelicals saying if you don't vote for Trump, then you don't love America or Jesus.
Right.
Exactly right. I mean, God, they can't blaspheme fast enough. They cannot blaspheme fast enough. I say to everyone the same question. Give me one gospel teaching of Jesus, the right wing, MAGA, Republican Party, whatever you want to call it. One teaching of Jesus we've seen Trump or the GOP fight for in this century. I've never gotten an honest answer. It's such a simple question. They'll quote every other part of the Bible to you to show how illiterate they are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Good times. Mm-hmm. So people say they're leaving religion. Every week, it's like we have another one of these stories. This is the PRRI poll, and people are leaving, and they're switching faith traditions in huge numbers. But this one's kind of interesting, because this is actually saying the particular reason. 26% of us now identify as religiously unaffiliated, but it says that the reason why more people are leaving, and the number of atheists have doubled in the last 10 years, but apparently people are leaving because A, sex abuse, and B, they're not happy with the homophobia. Dylan, I turn it over to you. I guess we shouldn't be surprised.
No. And one of the things that really gets me is that there are six or seven passages, verses in the Bible that are called the clobber passages.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I was very lucky to study those in grad school with a world-renowned biblical scholar named Dr. Julia O'Brien, who, if you pick up my Bible right now, you'll find that she's all over it because she wrote a lot of the commentary. She knows her shit. And none of those passages really say exactly what those folks think they say. So they're harping on something that's not really terribly important when you take the entire anthology of text that we call the Bible, and there's like seven.
Mm-hmm. So is the problem that Jesus is just too liberal to sell him to a large number of white Americans?
Well, I want to push back on that just a little bit.
Please, yeah.
Because there are places where Jesus was actually more conservative than other religious leaders of his day. Okay.
Absolutely.
And Dr. Amy Jill Levine's book, The Misunderstood Jew, is really outstanding. I cannot recommend that book highly enough.
Sure.
Where they get tripped up is the love your neighbor part. And they get so blinded by their myopic focus on we got to love the sinner and hate the sin. Well, I'm a theologian. I'm going to tell you right now, being gay, lesbian, trans, intersex, or asexual is neither a sin nor a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So please let that go. There's not a consensus on what these things mean. The one that they quote from Leviticus never mentions lesbianism at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it can't be a blanket prohibition on homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. You're so
right.
I can
talk about this all night, so I want to shut up.
Me too. It's one of my favorite topics. Nobody follows Leviticus. I mean, even Jesus throws it in the Pharisees' face. They come and say, hey, your followers are working on the Sabbath. He goes, oh, yeah, have you been killing kids for being disrespectful? Like, he literally throws Leviticus in their face, which is something you guys do all the time. Keith, your thoughts on the exodus from church? Because, this is an exodus from church. Black churches, numbers are stable. Jewish synagogues, numbers are stable. It's white Christians who are losing the numbers. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I just want to kind of piggyback on what Dylan was saying. He's absolutely right. And I also, I will say, I have had a personal story through this where, again, I was raised you know, evangelical. I listened to Rush Limbaugh, was a member of the NRA, you know, had a bunch of guns, you know, all that stuff. Voted straight ticket Republican most of my life, and had a come to Jesus moment where I realized, hey, wait a minute, I'm not really following Jesus here. I'm following my politics. I'm following, you know, this ideology. And so I had to, that's why I wrote Jesus Untangled, because I had that, yes, that kind of wake up moment. And, but through that, once I had that wake up kind of call, and we call that kind of deconstruction moment, I started looking even deeper into these other things. I thought, well, if I'm wrong about this, what else am I wrong about? Mm-hmm. And what I discovered was, like Dylan is saying, when it came to these clobber passages, right? So like 1 Corinthians and Romans, and I believed that. I thought, no, the Bible says it's a sin to be gay, because it says right here, it's as I understood it. But the more I studied and looked into it, it's like, you know, that word in the Greek doesn't mean homosexual. It actually means something completely different.
Arsenikolatai?
Arsenikotai and malakoi are the two words that are used. And they neither one of them map to anything we would call homosexuality.
Nope.
Malakoi is being effeminate for a man.
Soft.
And it's always about it's always actually used as a slur to a straight man. Like the same to a guy, you run like a girl, you're like a sissy. But it's never used to someone who is actually homosexual.
Sodom and Gomorrah is about a bunch of guys trying to gang rape two angels. Nothing about consensual same-sex activity.
That's right. That's exactly right. Yep. So, yeah. And so, yeah, when you look into it, you realize, like, well, the Bible really doesn't support this idea. I mean, in the English translations, one last thing. Our English translations kind of lie to us. So, like, again, if you go and look at 1 Corinthians, it'll say homosexuals will not enter the kingdom of God. But again, when you realize that it says in your English Bible, homosexual, but that word was added into the English translation in 1940, something like that. Not because of any scholarship. It was totally a political decision. So and there's been a documentary about that now, and scholars are kind of speaking out against it. So but I think we just need to let people know that, like, hey, this is not what the Bible really says. The problem is they don't care. And when you tell an evangelical Christian who says the Bible is the word of God and all of it's inerrant and infallible, when you say to them, hey, by the way, people have changed the words in your English Bible to say things that they want it to say for their own ends and purposes, they don't get upset. Because they happen to agree with it. So that's like.
Pastor Rose, I say this all the time. Mm-hmm. The good news of Jesus is you get to drop the gay hate and have some bacon. That's the deal. You can't eat pork chops and still be anti-gay. You can't do both of those things.
And
yet it's not enough.
Or cheeseburgers.
The good news, you get
or
to
wear
you get
polyester
to be nice.
Mixes.
like you get to treat gay people the way Jesus commands you to treat gay people, Christians, and yet that's still such a hard sell. And that's why young people
God
are leaving.
And love people and mind your damn business. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As far as the exodus from the church, and you said something, you said this is not happening in the Black church. Maybe not in the same kind of way as the evangelical white churches, but something else is happening in the Black church, which is they're maybe not have experiencing an exodus, but they're experiencing a dying off.
Yeah.
So what's happening is folks are not necessarily leaving in large numbers, but there's not the younger generation is not coming through the doors.
Right.
To start with. They're not coming through the doors to leave. They're just not coming. And so they're experiencing a different kind of problem, but it's still the same problem. Meaning, you know, you could have churches where folks are exiting in droves, or you could have churches where new blood is not coming in. And either way, you're looking at a dying church, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, for different reasons. I would say that on the Black side of it, on this end, with the new generations that are coming in, they just ain't with that bullshit. Because, you know, they just ain't with that bullshit. They're not looking at this fool in the pulpit talking all this trash out the side of his mouth. You know, outside the pulpit and behind closed doors, he's sleeping with the doggone secretary. He talking about you got to tithe and do all this and all that. Everybody in the church is still poor while this fool is pulling up to the church in a damn Bentley wearing a $5,000 suit. You know, there's more drama going on in the church than is going on in the streets. So they ain't with the bullshit. You know what I'm saying? So it's other reasons. And they're also not with you telling you them who they have to be. And I think that's also the same. Now, that is something that's probably crossing over into the white churches where people are done with somebody standing up in a pulpit telling them who they have to be.
That's, yeah.
And who and that they are not loved and that they're a mistake and that they're wicked when they haven't done anything to anybody. Hasn't caused any harm to anybody, but they're wicked and they're a sin and their whole life is a mistake. How did I wake up and be born a mistake by a God that you say is perfect, by a word that you say is inerrant? How did God make a mistake with me? So either God is not who you say he is, or I'm not who you say I am. And people are coming to the conclusion, I'm not the mistake, the sin, and the wicked piece of trash, and the worm, and the dirty rag that you say I am. God is who he is. They're making a decision one of two ways.
Either my father would have loved
I'm not what you say I am, or God is not who he says you say he is, or there is no God.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My dad would have loved everything you just said so much. My dad, when he retired down south, was the guy who would stand outside the church and argue with the priest. Why you got to talk about hell all the time? Why is it all about brimstone? Why do you talk about love? Why is it all going to be sin, sin, sin? I just want to give one more thing. PRRI found 2/3 of people who leave a faith tradition say they did so because they simply stopped believing in that religion's teachings. And they also found out that Catholics are losing, the Catholic Church is losing more members than it's gaining.
Mm-hmm.
So,
not surprising.
I mean, travel around the country and what do you see? You'll see old people in empty churches who can't understand that foreign-born priest. I mean, in Catholic churches across the country. And yeah, people are really turned off. And that church, they could allow married priests. Jesus did. They could ordain women. St. Paul had no problem with that. They could drop the homophobia, drop the birth control bullshit. None of that's in the Bible. They could actually preach love and community instead of just being this austere place where you get to know about your sins and who else is a sinner. They're driving people away.
That's right.
And it's not because of God or Jesus. It's because of the hangups of dead guys.
That's right. It's exactly. Let's make a point here. Yes, people are leaving the church, but they're not leaving Jesus. They're not leaving because, hey, shut up about Jesus. You guys just go on and on about this loving your neighbor, caring for the poor,
you know,
all that stuff. That's
Jesus.
Not why they're leaving. They're leaving for all the other bullshit that has nothing to do with Jesus, that Jesus never talked about. That's what they're rejecting. And it's exactly what you said, John. Look, if you want to bring people back, go back to the Jesus stuff. I think that's why they were there in the first place.
Yeah, I agree. I want to shift gears dramatically and ask you, Keith, about this business with chemtrails. I spend a lot of time in L.A., so a lot of my crazy friends want to talk about chemtrails all the time, and I love it, and I've seen them, and I don't know what they are. But the Tennessee legislature passed a bill based on this conspiracy theory about chemtrails. What is going on, and why did this catch your attention?
Yes, well, I think I want to start like a new bit here. I think I could probably have enough ammunition to do this like every week or so. It's sort of like I want to call it the Guardians of Imaginary Danger. Strike again. So we go now to Tennessee, where the Champions of Fantasy Problem Solving have passed a bill saving all of their citizens from the fictional evils of chemtrails. Yes, this is another imaginary problem solved by Republicans. And this is not a joke, guys. This is real. And it wasn't just introduced. It asked.
It passed
the House. It passed the Senate. It passed. And so according to the bill, the federal government or some other shadowy organization is conducting geoengineering experiments, intentionally dispersing chemicals into the atmosphere, blah, blah, blah. And so they literally passed a bill to protect their citizens from something that isn't happening and isn't real. No one but Alex Jones and my drunk uncle believe in this very often debunked conspiracy theory. But Tennesseans can sleep safely tonight knowing they are protected from airplanes in the sky squirting chemicals in the clouds that are turning the frogs gay and make people vote Democrat. It's so ridiculous.
Frog.
And not only that, you think that would be it, right? By the way, I was born in Tennessee, so this is especially painful for me to have to report this kind of stuff.
Lots of good people in Tennessee.
Yes, there are many good people in Tennessee and from Tennessee. But so what's more wackadoodle is that there are 7 other states that have also introduced legislation to also ban chemtrails. Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Kentucky, Minnesota, New Hampshire, and South Dakota.
They're working so hard for their constituents.
Working so hard. And what's funny is, one of the bits of the language from the bill that says, they want to protect people from the intentional injection, release, or dispersion by any means of chemicals, chemical compounds, substances, or apparatus within the borders of the state into the atmosphere with the express purpose of affecting temperature, weather, or the intensity of sunlight. I think they may have accidentally passed a climate change bill. Don't tell them. It's so ridiculous.
It almost sounds like that.
What I love most about this is a Democrat out of Nashville introduced an amendment to the bill about Bigfoot. Saying,
yes.
Whereas it is documented among those within the pseudoscience of cryptozoology that there exists a large and hairy human-like creature that inhabits forests in North America, did a whole addendum about Bigfoot just as a mockery to the overall bill.
Like, why don't we just tack on a Sasquatch protection bill next, right? Why not?
Commonly referred to as a Yeti, Bigfoot, or Sasquatch, and whereas it is the intent of this General Assembly to protect the public health and welfare.
Yes. Wow. It's so insane. Now, another also in Tennessee, this also happened in Tennessee. They are hard at work protecting their citizens from this time. They passed a bill making it illegal or not illegal, but having this classified as something as a drug. And it's called vaccine lettuce.
Yes. So what is vaccine lettuce?
Well, it doesn't exist. That's the first thing you should know about it. It isn't a real thing yet. It's something that scientists have been theorizing that they could possibly do, which is to grow lettuce or bananas or some other kind of foods that would be infused with the same kind of things you would put in a vaccine. But of course, the problem with this would be that you wouldn't just be able to eat as much as you want because you could overdose on it. So they would have to know your body weight. It'd have to be a prescription, and that it's not going to be sold, you know, at the grocery stores or anything like that. And by the way, it doesn't even exist. Like, no one has even created it yet.
No one's tried this.
Yes, but they're quick to protect their people. They're so worried about protecting people in Tennessee from this imaginary vaccine lettuce. So rest easy, Americans. Our politicians are ever vigilant against imaginary problems like chemtrails and vaccine lettuce.
Thank you.
And what they're hoping is you won't notice that they're not doing a damn thing about actual problems like, you know, gun violence, food insecurity for children, the nationwide mental health crisis, housing, you know, homeless people, that kind of thing.
And these are the same folks who would probably vote against like EPA regulations.
Oh, of course.
Of course. Definitely. Of course.
That would actually, you know, protect people against things that corporations might be spewing off into the atmosphere.
Keith, we got to hit a break, but I praise you for calling them out. And I agree with you. I hope now the Tennessee legislature can get back to the real issues that really affect people's lives, like transgender children playing sports. You know, the important things that affect us all. A quick break. We'll be right back in just a moment. Mr. Cruz, I want to talk to you about Project 2025 while we still have some time. We'll be right back with December, Keith, and Dylan. This is Progress.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles, just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We are back with the God Squad. Pastor December Rose, Keith Giles, and Dylan Cruz are with us. With our remaining minutes, Dylan, I wanted to tug on your coat a bit about the 2025 project. Last week, we found out that Heritage Foundation, after building this thing up, removed it from their website because people are on to their bullshit and paying attention now. What have you uncovered in terms of the Project 2025 document?
Well, I was lucky to download a copy before they did that. And today I read Russ Vought's chapter. And if you remember, he's the guy behind the Center for Renewing America who thinks that America needs to answer to Jesus. And when he wants to answer to Jesus, it's his white Christian nationalist Jesus.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I read his whole chapter today, and reading that, you know why they took it off the website, because it's as horrible as you think it is. And if you want a habitable planet, then you cannot vote for Republicans, because what they want to do is they want to have special counsel who can be creative and overturn legal precedents that have been standing for years, just like they did with Roe. Hmm. They want to ban something called cumulative impact analysis, which is something that the EPA does to make sure that there's not all kinds of horrible things that are going to happen to ecosystems.
You mean responsible stewardship of God's creation?
Yes, mm-hmm. I wrote a whole book about it called Go Golden. Go read that, people. Yeah. He calls Biden's climate change policies climate fanaticism. And while I do applaud some things that Biden has done for climate, he's not done enough. Nobody in the developed world has done near enough. Not one country, including Joe Biden.
Mm. He definitely doesn't qualify as a fanatic.
No, absolutely not. He's a capitalist, and he's been a center right politician for 40 or 50 years. This is not news.
Yeah.
He wants to. Here's where the Christian nationalism really comes in, though. He wants to repeal Biden's executive order 14020, which promotes gender equality, and that it established something called the Gender Policy Council.
Mm-hmm.
Which, of course, patriarchal white Christian nationalists hate, because they don't want women to be equal.
Correct.
They don't want women to have access to health care. And then he lies, saying that this new woke gender ideology is a part of this, and that gender-affirming surgeries are happening for minors. This is not how that works. I know trans people who had to go through so many hoops and be adults to have gender reassignment or gender confirming surgery. Mm-hmm. Trans people have always existed, Mr. Vaught. This is not new. What's new is trying to include them under the human rights umbrella and constitutional rights.
Why are there so many transgender people showing up now? It's like, because it's never been safer for them to come out seek the care they need, because they've never been less afraid of being murdered, even though every one of them is still afraid of being murdered.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There is at least a modicum of safety now, and more people are accepting and understanding that this shit is not a choice. Like I said earlier, being gay, lesbian, trans, or asexual is neither a sin nor a choice.
Yes.
I don't care. And then they want to have a domestic policy council that promotes white Christian families. Mm-hmm. And, harken back to the Leave It to Beaver myth.
Yeah.
When moms were taking mom's little helper because they were depressed out of their minds.
And again, they want your suffrage. I mean, they do.
Oh,
these people literally view suffrage as being the thing that broke apart the nuclear family unit in this country, not the destruction of the middle class or that men are dicks. They just blame women voting.
One politician actually said it. Who was that clown in North Carolina?
That's
didn't
right.
he say we should go back to what before women could, when women
That's
could
right.
vote?
He
said
good.
That out loud.
More of it. Guys, we are out of time. We are totally out of time. We never have enough time. Next week, we'll do the full hour. Dylan, how do we follow you and keep up with all your work?
Tattooed Theologians, my blog. My books are on Amazon, and I'm all over Twitter.
Thank you so much. Keith Giles, how do we follow you?
KeithGiles.com is my blog. My books are on Amazon, and I'm all over social media.
Pastor Rose, how do we follow you?
December Rose, DESIMBER, and my book, The Church Can Go to Hell, is on Amazon.
Love you all. Thank you for classing up our show. Have a great evening. We'll see you next week. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Thea. I'm John Fugelsang. Keep it tuned to SiriusXM Progress. Peace.